Rosetta Tharpe is all but forgotten today, but she influenced musicians from Eric Clapton to Etta James. Gail Wald has done her part to spread the word about Rosetta Tharpe. Wald's a professor of English at George Washington University and the author of Shout, Sister, Shout, The Untold Story of Rock and Roll Trailblazer, Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Shout, sister, shout. Shout, sister, shout. Shout, sister, shout. Tell the whole world what it's all about.
Now listen, everybody, to the precious word. I'm gonna do some chirping, and I ain't no bird.
So I guess the question is, where did she come from? Who is she?
She was born on a farm in Cotton Plant, Arkansas in 1915, and Cotton Plant is a little kind of extended delta town in eastern Arkansas. And she grew up with parents, and especially a mother, who encouraged her musical talents. And her mother was an evangelist for the Church of God in Christ, and that's a Pentecostal denomination that actually was special for having very conservative social mores, but being relatively liberal when it came to sound. So Rosetta Tharpe grew up in a church world that was very receptive to the sounds of the quote-unquote outside world, and was receptive to the idea of a little girl with musical talent picking up a guitar and playing guitar. And by the time she was really a young girl, 6 or 7 years old, she had migrated with her mother to Chicago. She was part of that generation of African Americans who made that great migration to the North. And she was a popular performer in Chicago churches, at her own church. She was talked about as the little guitar playing and singing miracle. And she shortly thereafter went on the road with her mother as an evangelist to save souls for the Church of God in Christ. And she spent her teenage years traveling quite a lot, going from church to church, to tent meeting to tent meeting. And the big break for her came in 1938 when she was recruited to come to perform at the Cotton Club. And
the Cotton Club in Harlem in New York City.
That's right. Although by that time in 1938, the Harlem Club had relocated to Midtown. So it was kind of more in the area of what a lot of people would think of as Broadway today. So it was kind of the final years of the Cotton Club. And that was extraordinary because no one before Rosetta Tharpe had dared, in a way, to bring the music of Black Pentecostal churches to a secular stage. And for New York audiences, she was something really new.
I guess the thing that caught my eye the most was her guitar playing in the clips that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
I can't describe it, but maybe you can. There was really something different about the way she used the guitar.
You know, people used to say that she played like a man, and in those days, that was a compliment to her. I don't think she blinked when people said that. I think she was, you know, proud to have people say that. But I think what they meant by that is that she played with a kind of authority and assertiveness with that instrument that we sometimes mythologize as needing to be tamed. And so when you see her play, first of all, she never looks at the strings. But second of all, she moves with that guitar. She rocks with it. She sways with it. And she plays with a kind of exuberance that I don't think we get to see enough. There are women guitarists out there, but we don't get to see enough of those examples. So to me, it's that exuberance she brings to playing the instrument, her absolute control over the instrument, and her ability to kind of telegraph that to her audience and get people excited by these hot dog moves that she does. She could sit down and play guitar. She could play it behind her back. And of course, there were other blues musicians who were doing the same thing. But she had her own special gift, and she loved being in a studio with other men and seeing if they could play a riff and then stealing it from them or playing a riff back, and she loved that kind of competition.
When you think of her playing, is there a particular song that you think about?
Oh, there are so many. You know, her early recordings are interesting. When she first went into the studio in 1938, she did solo work. It's very unadorned. She's playing with an acoustic guitar, and her very first recording was a song called Rock Me, which was a traditional gospel song that had been composed by Thomas Dorsey, except most people knew that song as Hold Me in My Bosom. Her record company took the chorus that had the phrase Rock Me in it, which was referring to God as a parent deity who was rocking humanity, his child, and she gave it a juicy growl. But what she did in those, what you can hear in those early recordings, is her developing a guitar style that would complement her voice. She wasn't just playing a chord behind herself to mark time. She was doing interesting things with the notes and playing with that guitar so that she could actually have a conversation with it.
Oh, let thou presence thrill me. Thou loving kindness fill me. Then you hold me. Hold me in the hollow of thy hand. You hide me in thy bosom. Tell the storms of life is over. Oh, rock me in a cradle of thou dove. Only feel. Then you take me to your blessed home above.
One of her songs that I gather was one of her really big hits was a song called Strange Things Happening Every Day.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about that song that made it so big?
Well, it's got a pared-down sound. That song came out, was a big hit for her in 1944, 1945. She did it with three musicians in a studio, the Sammy Price Trio. And unlike the big band music of the earlier 40s that had a huge sound with horns and a lot of brass, this was a very pared-down, and I think in the mid-1940s, a very modern sound. It's a very rocking record.
Church people say they are in this holy way. There are strange things happening every day. On that last great judgment day, when they drive them all away, there are strange things happening every day. Every day.
Every day.
Every day.
Every day.
There are strange things happening every day.
Every day.
And it has this wonderful lyric, strange things happening every day, that literally in the song refers to the hypocrisy of some people who preach religion on the one hand and don't practice what they preach. But I think in 1945 those were very appealing lyrics because they could transfer to a lot of things. And in fact, there were a lot of things that were strange that were happening every day. And so I think it had this lyric that just worked on a number of levels. And of course, there's just the voice. She's got a very expressive, and in those days, a kind of bell-like soprano voice, a strong voice that can convey kind of enthusiasm and energy and charisma. And it's the combination of all those things coming together, I think, that made that a hit.
What happened to her ultimately?
She was debilitated by a stroke in 1970, although she continued performing even after a leg had to be amputated. She performed in 1972 at Lincoln Center with the great Marion Williams, her fellow gospel singer. And then in 1973, she was literally on the verge of recording another album with the Savoy label when she had another stroke that ultimately led to her death. The curious thing about her, or maybe it's not curious, but it's telling, I suppose, is that she's buried in a Philadelphia cemetery. She was living in Philadelphia for the last couple of decades of her life without a gravestone. So when you go to visit her grave today, she's there, but there's no marker. And to me, this was poignant and also symbolic. It said something, even though the reasons for why there might not be a marker are somewhat mundane, her husband never bought her one, etc. The symbolism seems very rich to me about the process of memory and forgetting and how it is that we come to forget and how it is that someone like that, you know, is kind of symbolically lost to us.
Hmm. Do you think that there is a kind of renewed interest in Sister Rosetta Tharpe now?
I hope so. I think, you know, this terrific tribute CD that came out several years ago has helped, and I should admit that I wrote the liner notes for that so I can call it terrific. But, you know, getting those kinds of props from so many women artists especially who are so well respected.
Now, on the tribute album, do you have a favorite song?
You know, my favorite song on that album is Toshi Regan's version of Rock Me, Rosetta Tharpe's very first studio recording, and a song that she came back to several times, three or four times in her career, and she re-recorded the song. And I love Toshi Reagan's version because Toshi is a younger artist. She's the daughter of Bernice Johnson Reagan from Sweet Honey in the Rock. Bernice Johnson Reagan is also a distinguished gospel scholar. And I love Toshi's kind of younger generation take on a very old standard from the gospel repertoire, and I think she breathes a lot of new life into it.
What do you think Sister Rosetta Tharpe's legacy is?
Well, her legacy has to do with the extraordinary music that she was making before her time. And one of the arguments I try to make in the book is that we don't really understand Rosetta Tharpe because we haven't maybe really caught up to her yet. And so I think her legacy is kind of still yet to be determined. I think she certainly could be an inspiration to a new generation, especially women who want to make loud noises on their guitars and sing loud. She's certainly a good place to start.
Gail Wald is the author of Shout, Sister, Shout, the untold story of rock and roll trailblazer Sister Rosetta Tharpe. You can find a link to Wald's Rosetta Tharpe website on our website at ttbook.org. Coming up, the pub rock revolution that swept through Britain during the 1970s. Also, Jonathan Lethem on his new novel about an alternative rock band as we continue our hour on popular music. I'm Jim Fleming. It's to the best of our knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.